Now, why are the Three Amigos? Well, a little while ago, when the three gents who are going to be coming up onto the stage, Corneille Mulder, Theo de Jager, and Gerard Papenfuss, came onto the BizNews stage, it was about a year ago. In fact, it was at the investment conference last year. We noticed that the community was really interested in their story. And it is quite an extraordinary story. They have been to the United States. They have explained in words of one syllable that the Americans could understand what it was that their constituency was feeling. And you just know by the feedback that we've been getting in the international media, and certainly from the U.S. towards South Africa, that message definitely landed. When you look at the three of them, it's not surprising. Dr. Corneille Mulder has been in Parliament since 1988. In other words, he was in the pre-democracy Parliament. So he is the longest-serving MP. You just met an MP for 3 years, and Johnny moved off into business. Corneille Mulder is there. He's moved his way up. He comes from a political family, and he is the leader of the Freedom Front, who, as you heard from Rob Herzog, has got the values closer to what Mr. Herzog thinks. And in fact, you didn't say it at this conference. You did a year ago, though, that on values, Freedom Front's, they're more aligned with me. Although you did say it, you're 45-44 against the DA. It's a close thing. Corneille, his party, the Freedom Front Plus, is in the government of national unity. He could be a cabinet minister if he so chose. But like Jordan Hill Lewis, he stayed out of the fray, and he is using that to build an interesting partner in the many coalitions that we are expecting after November the 4th around the country. Theo de Jager is a gentleman that I met in Davos when he was the president of the World Farmers Association, and it was an organization rather. It was quite extraordinary to be in Davos and to meet a South African, a Burki, as you'll see, a real good, strong Afrikaner, who was the president of this huge international body representing agriculture at the most powerful forum in the world. He left there, though, to come home, and the organization that he now represents is for farmers, and it's called SAI, and we'll hear more about that, no doubt. And then Gerard Papenfuss, a gentleman I've known for some time. He's spent decades, literally decades, as the loudest voice for South Africa's small and medium-sized employers. It's okay when you're a big company because you've got a HR department that can represent you. When you're not a big company, you are the guys who actually are creating employment in a nation, and yet you are the most vulnerable to many of the simply crazy laws that have been implemented and visited on business in this country. Gerard is out there. He's a man in the arena, all three of them are, fighting the good fight for employers in that field. He's a favorite target of the establishment, but he is a favorite amongst small businesses. Please welcome back, by popular demand, the Three Amigos.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Ons gaan nie Afrikaans praat nie, maar welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Lovely to see you back again. Year ago, you know, these guys really kept us entertained a year ago, and we were looking to a late afternoon discussion. But now, thank you for stepping into the pre-lunch discussion. Corneille, leaders of other political parties have been here. I wanted to hear from you on that, and I feel a little bit guilty that you haven't had the stage. But guys, I'm sure you'll allow Corneille just to give us a little thoughts on how you felt about Jordan Hill Lewis and Duduzani Zuma, and what their parties, the second and third largest parties, in the country are thinking? Because where do you rank, by the way, on that table?
Well, we are under the first, I always say, ironically at the moment, in South Africa, we've got 530 political parties. But relax, not all of them are going to participate in the local elections. And I always say, let's look at the top 10 parties, basically, and look what they stand for. And I cannot think for 1 minute that people cannot feel accommodated in terms of what those 10 parties stand for. At the moment, I'm fortunate. I became leader of the party in February of last year. And I said, it can't be that difficult. It can't be. I said, first of all, let's go out there and find and see where, what is in the hearts and the minds of our South African citizens. Find out. And once you know what that means and what it says, position yourself next to that and represent that, and the rest will follow. And I must say, I'm very fortunate. The last 18 months, the party has seen enormous growth across all sectors of society, and I'm very fond and very happy to be in that position. And I'm very optimistic about the elections coming up. You correctly pointed out in the introduction that Jordan Hill-Lewis has also decided not to go into government. I think he's following my example, because I think you can do much better staying out of government, technically as the leader yourself, while you are still represented in government, and you can do what needs to be done.
It is a sense that being in government, in the government of national unity, you tend to be captured.
If you allow yourself to be captured, I was the leaders of the parties in the government of national unity. We are supposed to meet regularly with the president. The last meeting we had in that respect was in November of last year, sure, at the Cradle of Humankind. And it was said then, but Mr. President, it can't be like this. We should meet regularly. And it was decided we will meet monthly. Well, we haven't met since November, obviously. But it was fascinating when I was there. I was the only person at that stage who was not part of the executive. And what concerned me was that the other leaders acted not like leaders of political parties. They acted like ministers appointed by the president. And from my perspective, the president was not there as the president. He was there as leader of the ANC. But I think that's a problem. And you can be co-opted if you allow yourself to be co-opted. And I think it all depends. Don't Davi earlier this morning mentioned about the executive being a situation where people think it's wonderful and you can drive in a big car, whatever the case may be. Don't be fooled by nonsense. Stand up and represent the people that you want to represent, and don't be shy and afraid to take the ANC head on. That's what you should do.
And you took on your minister, who clearly was part of this meeting, John Steenhuisen, Theo, talking to you. Foot and mouth disease. We spoke when there was no talking of foot and mouth disease. In fact, no one seemed to be interested in it. And you were waving flags. I can't remember how long ago it was, but it was long before the popular press got involved. And you were explaining what a disaster this could be. And we've seen it all unravel. But do you think that Corneille's got a point when he says the Minister of Agriculture at that time, although being a DA member, was acting as a member of the cabinet rather than what we would have expected from a party with that approach?
Like, remember, my members vote for at least 5 different political parties. My members are small and medium-scale family farmers, and the family farmer is not big or small or black or white or rich or poor, or well-established or a newcomer. It's a family that ekes out a living from the soils. And when we saw this disease running like wildfire, for no other reason than a failure in government, the reason we have foot and mouth on this scale now is because government officials did not do their job. They did not abide by the regulations which they are the custodians of. And when we spoke, I said to you, this can turn out to be the biggest disaster in the livestock industry in our lifetime and more. And we urged government, well, the minister, because he's not from the deployed cadre fraternity, we asked him, to go to extraordinary measures, which I must give him credit. He did three very wise things too. He did appoint some of our best scientists and best veterinarians to an advising committee in April last year. Then he got some of the strongest farmers leaders in the country onto advisory committee earlier this year. Not all of them. Me and some of my closer allies were excluded for a very specific reason. And
which was?
Well, we were very critical of the flow of vaccines. And we asked a lot of questions about the prices and where the money goes. If you have a crisis like this, you always follow the money. And the third wise thing was he changed the national policy. On the 26th of November last year, he said, let's vaccinate all the cattle. Let's get ahead of this disease, which was a very brave thing to do. But then three problems arose. Firstly, no one listened to the advice of these advisory committees. And when one brave veterinarian, Dani Wurndal, said, no use, we spend all these hours in meetings and we give our best advice and nothing comes of it, he was kicked out of that committee. The second thing, there was confusion about who pays for what and what it would cost. Like, you can't believe it. Started off with 300 rand per head of cattle per year, 150 rand per dose. Then when we asked about it, because we know what it costs to bring it into the country, they changed and said that it will cost 86 rand per head. It should not cost 1 rand more than 45. Everything included, the logistics, the cold storage, the delivery anywhere in South Africa. And eventually, we went to some of our networking partners, Sakalicho, whose advice and partnership we would not have been able to do this, but also Free State Agriculture from the heart of AgriSA joined us in putting pressure on the minister to answer this very simple question. What in law or regulation would prohibit us to vaccinate our own cattle? Or more than that, to import it and to do the distribution. The main thing is we wanted the decision where vaccines would go and when out of the hands of some government official without a name or a face in somewhere in an office in Pretoria. We wanted to do that, to make that decision ourselves. And because we did not get an answer from him, we answered the court to clear it up. And we landed up three times in court, and eventually the judge said there's nothing in law that would prohibit us. If this decision was made in January, we would have saved literally thousands and thousands of cattle, hundreds of enterprises, especially in the dairy industry.
Corne, from a political point of view, did that cost Steenhuisen his job, his leadership of the DA?
Yes, no doubt. I spoke to John sometime last year, and he was under no... He was absolutely committed to be available to be re-elected as leader of the Democratic Alliance. As a matter of fact, the fact that he then didn't make himself available was not a voluntary decision. I know exactly what happened behind the scenes, but I don't think I should say that in public necessarily. But he was basically given an ultimatum. And because of that, I think the agreement then was, or I don't think I know, the agreement was that then he will remain as the Minister of Agriculture. And that's why when that also went south, he did that interview with Adrian Basson, in which he was also taken to task afterwards. And you will note that he is very quiet at the moment, and that's also not a coincidence. I think I know certain steps were taken to keep him quiet. And that's unfortunate. That's what happens in politics. You can destroy your career very quickly by doing and saying the wrong things.
But it seems like he really wasn't answering or listening to the right people. And it gets back to that capture situation in the government of national unity.
Yes, I think so, unfortunately. It depends on how you view these things and to whom you are listening. As you correctly pointed out, the advice was not taken seriously or it was not adhered to. and then you pay a price. And then obviously, and that's just from my perspective, I've always said that, and I've been taken to task because of that. I say arrogance is a problem. I've had to deal with the Democratic Alliance in terms of coalitions for quite some time, and quite often, and I don't even want to go there, Johannesburg, and that's my honest view. Johannesburg would still today be under the government of a coalition of the good people. I've got no doubt about that. We were governing Johannesburg. That coalition fell because of arrogance. Maybe it was part of a strategy to let Johannesburg go down the tubes to where it's now and then come back as a big savior. But I think, and I think people saw that it was a cabinet lehotla where a question was asked of Mr. Steenhuisen about the court case. And he responded by saying, oh, when they want to go to court, they're going to wait some more. And I think that's the difference. John was an excellent chief whip. The chief whip of a party needs to be a little bit, I wouldn't say arrogant, but you need to be able to do what you need to do and to take things to that level. But once you become a minister or a leader of the party, you have to be different in your approach. And I think that sent us a wrong signal. And I, with all due respect, I know I'm leader of the computing party, but I think it cost the Democratic Alliance a lot, unfortunately, for them.
Gerard, you represent small businesses. There are not too many voices for small businesses in South Africa, certainly not like your members. Have you seen any reaction with the election coming up now on the 4th of November that supports what Corne said a moment ago, that his party is growing and the DA not so much?
I can't say that I notice a change. The thing is, the people, the parties in the government of national unity place, according to the tune set by the ANC, they don't make a difference. The legislation in respect of transformation, which is killing South Africa, that is just going on. It's continuing. The parties that should make a difference stop it. Weren't able to do that. Business is feeling the absence of role players that is supposed to influence the ANC, and there are role players. Well, they're playing the game with the ANC. Transformation, the level of transparency, the speed of transformation is continuing, and transformation is almost a positive work, but this is destructive. This is killing business. And if you look at the unemployment figures, we see the result of business getting hamstrung. If we free up the hands of business, then you will see a difference in South Africa in a matter of weeks. They stand ready to make a difference. And BE and employment equity are two things that... that's really killing business. This is the thing that is keeping us back. And we don't hear the main political parties in parliament making enough noise. Now, the thing is, they say they talk about it and the ANC isn't listening. Well, then what's the point of being there? Now, there's a lot of arguments, EFF and
MP. Let's ask Corne that. What's the point of being there if they're not listening, if they're tone deaf?
You have to be there. I was and I'm still am a serious supporter of the idea of a government of national unity. If you can be around the table where decisions are made and you can influence that, you should be there. But we should also realize what animal we are dealing with in terms of the ANC. For the ANC, the government of national unity was something that they needed to stay in power. And once again, this morning, I listened to Dawie very closely. He referred to politicians quite often. And I listened to that and I wanted to say, well, you must understand, not all politicians are bad. Not as all economists are also not bad. And he made the very strong point that it's in the hands. Well, he said the taxpayers are sick and tired of everything. It's in the hands of the same people out there to elect the right people to government. That's what you should do. So I believe one has to participate and has to be there. I think if I look back in the past, 1985, I think, was the time when the previous government went beyond the point of no return, and there was no return from there. It was one way down until the end of that system. The ANC has also now passed that point, and it's a question of time. I think polls indicated that. Everybody indicates that we will come to a chance. And I'm working, the local government elections, as far as I'm concerned, is just the foundation that we're busy throwing, because 2029, I want to remove the ANC from power. I heard Prince Mashila said 5 years later. I can't wait 5 years later. We have to do that in 2029. And Davi should stop talking about politicians, because I need him as a Minister of Finance, and then he'll become a politician himself.
But you wanted that job, Gerard.
Gerard got a different job, also in the executive.
Ah,
Rob has appointed me in Minister of Labour.
It'll be so easy. You just get rid of a couple of laws and away we go.
Well, it is actually easy, but we know it's they're doubling down on what is wrong. And it's all anti-business, anti-economic growth policies. Now, that's stupid. And we don't understand that. I don't think these guys realize where money comes from. And when I say that, they do not realize. They do not understand money. Entrepreneur takes something and makes something out of nothing. Now, first of all, they have a lack of self-belief. They don't know that it can actually happen. And that's why they distrust capitalism. They distrust entrepreneurs. I had a discussion with these guys recently, and they...
Who's these guys? What do you say?
BE, senior, prominent BE people that promote the idea, and they talk about a term, social entrepreneurship. And I interrupt them, and I say, what is a social entrepreneur? And then they ramble on and explain a lot of nonsense. And you say, no. I don't, there is no such thing as a social entrepreneur. There's only an entrepreneur. That's an individual. He takes control. He manages a particular area. He's full in control. And he don't share. He appoint people. You can work for him. He lift people in that manner. And then he mentors them to do the same. That's where entrepreneurs come from. They work for other people and then they do the same. They just don't understand it. The whole idea of how economy is run, they just don't understand it. And it is from the top, from Mr. Ramaphosa himself, right down. They just don't understand it. So that's the battle we're fighting. This is the context in which business need to do our thing. And we do. But there's so much potential. I mean, we can change this place around. Just leave us alone. And that's actually the battle, is to keep government out of everything. My dad was a farmer, and that's where I grew up, and it's still our land. And, government officials, I actually never seen them. Farmers, and that's the thing that created my approach to life, is you do your own thing. And we do not like interference. And all entrepreneurs, you don't go into business with the idea to one day being told that you must give away a share of your business in order to business, and then be prescribed who to appoint in terms of a color scheme of people. We can't run our appointment of our staff on a spreadsheet. This is what they do. And that illustrates their lack of understanding how business works and what is in the mind of an entrepreneur. You will not grow the economy as long as you do that, because an entrepreneur, this entrepreneur is independent. He does his own thing and he hates interference. And government doesn't understand that. They've got the social thing, and there's the clash.
But I want to take you now back to the US. Back to where you got the title of the Three Amigos.
You gave us that title.
That's a good title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thea, what do the Americans think about all of this? When they look at South Africa genuinely, and you clearly, you had Gerard there, giving the firebrand stuff. I'm sure you were not far behind him. Cornet hopefully was the adult in the room. What did they interpret? I mean, how do they see our little country from their perspective?
Well, remember, we got there and we got exposure to many more role players there than what we expected. We did not expect to be in the White House so often to meet such senior government officials. And at every meeting, we had 14 of them, at every meeting, Corneille would give the political analysis of what's going on here and what are the possible scenarios for the future. I spoke of agriculture, but also rural safety, kill the farmer, kill the boer, and the Expropriation Act. And of course, Gerard and his English has improved a lot since. He spoke of employment equity and BEE and that kind of stuff. And then they would ask us questions and also try to bring these topics into a relation with each other. And it was this evening, and even if I live to be 100 years old, I will not forget that evening when Gerard was done. This one guy said, we've listened to you and we now want you to listen to us. We have a message for South Africa which we cannot seem to get through. We've said it over and over to the embassy here. We've said it to the visitors who came with President Ramaphosa. And we have said it to two or three other groups too, but we don't pick it up on the South African side. And the message is simple. You want to restore trade relations? Then we want these four things to happen. We want the ANC to distance itself from kill the farmer, kill the boer. We want farm murders to be declared a priority crime similar to rhino poaching or cash in transit robberies. We want American investors to be exempted from BEE and employment equity. And we want the Expropriation Act to be changed so that market-related compensation is being paid at the end of a legal process and not at the beginning of it. Now, we know that since these four asks became five asks, they also added the Iran thing. This is what they said.
And so what's the Iran thing?
The relationship with Iran, our foreign relations. They say we are not as independent as we say. And then the meeting was over. And when we got back into the hotel, we said, maybe we should just compare our notes. What is expected from us? We must somehow communicate this thing now. Corneille said, well, we should write a press release and send it out. And we sat there. Now, you know, when three people have to write something, it takes three times longer. So eventually, we all just put our notes in there and Gerard did the final writing. And then...
In Engels.
You know, he's just lying. You know, how could it be expected of me to do the final writing? But that's okay, Ben.
So well, because he complains about everything. If he writes it, there's nothing to complain about. And then we decided to send it to each one of those people who sat with us in the meeting and asked, did we understand you right? Is this what you asked from us? And of course, they only had a few language editing and they said, that is it. So we sent it out. Now, the very first reaction was, this cannot be true. Why would they send it through you? Why doesn't it come through the embassy? And so this is false news and misinformation. But it was the next afternoon when those officials themselves also sent out the press release to say, this is exactly what we asked them to convey to South Africa, which brought an end to the quarrel about whether this is true or not, and really brought the focus to these four issues.
And then you were accused of being traitors to the country.
No, we were not.
You were not?
No, we were not. That's ironic. Prior to our visit, Solidarity Movement did send a group as well. But the asks were conveyed to us, and we take note of that. But the three of us were never accused of being treacherous or traitors, whatever the case may be. And we are very fortunate about that, because there was nothing wrong that we've done. We went there to defend South Africa. in most of the panel discussions we had, etc., we said, if you want to punish South Africa, don't punish the people in South Africa. We will give you the names of who you should punish, and I know they are busy with all kinds of processes, but we don't want sanctions. We want the GOA to continue to the benefit of everyone. So we were never accused of anything in that regard. And since then, these four asks are still very relevant. We had a meeting with the American ambassador about a month ago, I think a little bit more than a month ago, and these things are still on the table. And the question now is, what is the ANC doing to address these things or not? And that is a problem. But Gerard is right. The opportunities are unlimited in terms of what could positively change for South Africa if we have the political gravitas to take these things on board and just do it. I'm very optimistic about South Africa, extremely optimistic about the economy and everything that can be done. But there is, as David correctly pointed out, this political obstacle. But we never give up. We are about to remove that obstacle, and then you'll see what happens.
And Rolf Meyer, the fact that he's now in Washington?
I can tell you a long personal story, but maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should just in five words, quickly. On the 18th of February 1993, my brother and I met with Rolf in his office in Cape Town. And it was CODESA 1 and 2 failed. And there were some further multi-party negotiations to take place at that stage. And the two of us went to see Rolf to say, open it up in such an extent that then the Conservative Party could participate. My brother and Rolf is more the same age. I'm younger. And I was, it's before cell phones. And I was observing body language. And I saw that Rolf's attention was not with us. After a while, he received a call. He was very excited. He took the call at his desk. I listened with long ears. He came back and he sat down. He said, something wonderful just now happened. You said, what? He said, no, that was Joe Slovo who called. The ANC NEC has just agreed to a government of national unity for 5 years. And he was very excited about that at the time. I'm a bit of more cynical, perhaps. And so when we left and we got to the door and I said goodbye to Rolf, I said, you know, Mr. Meyer, my youngest daughter was born 5 days ago. You negotiated until before she's in grade one. That's all you've done. But in any case, that happened many years ago. Rolf is now there. He's the ambassador. I met Rolf before he went. I met him. He saw me when he came back again. And he's committed to try and not only represent the ANC, which is he's expected to do. He's supposed to represent all of us as the ambassador. But I'm not convinced that he will find the doors to open for him specifically. I think with all due respect, we've got better entrance into the White House and into the Trump administration than the official South African government structures.
So what's the purpose of sending him if he's not the best person for the job?
Well, I'm not saying he's not the best person for the job. I think they could send anyone. As long as it's the perception exists that the current ANC that dominates international relations, and Tu mentioned that, the fifth ask that came was to say South Africa says that we are non-aligned in terms of international relations. But we are not. Not a single Arab country decided to take Israel to the International Court on genocide. South Africa decided to do that. Why? And then there's Iran and all those kind of things. So as long as our government and quite often says, if something is said in terms of South Africa with regard to international relations, it's not South Africa that says that. It's not even the government of national unity. It's the ANC that says that. Because international relations, in terms of the agreement that was reached with the government of national unity, and that those negotiations we were not part of, international relations remain the sole domain of the ANC. So as long as that is the kind of approach, they can send whoever they like. They can send anybody. They can send even the Rasi. The Americans will not take that seriously because they've got a problem.
Karat, what about the view from the business side? Do you have members? Presumably, you got members who, like Sasol, export into the United States. Independence Day meant 30% tariffs. That's away for the moment. Is the pressure off? Are members pushing you to do something?
Well, the pressure isn't off, and that's the dilemma. I think there's the U.S. administration to some extent wants to teach us a lesson. South Africa, they do not appreciate what's happening, but it hurts. In Torbach, there's a citrus company that's closing now, and that's directly related to duties. So that's hurting. And to communicate with America, it's not sending an email and pick up the phone. It's a process. It's slow. And there are streams of thinking in the White House, in the administration. Some of that is quite radical, about a very radical and very strong view towards South Africa.
Negative or positive?
Well, strong view in terms of, that things are really going wrong here. And that's why there's the refugee program. There are people that's written us off, but the fact is we are here to stay, and that's the message that need to go over, that we are here to stay, and the measures that's implemented mustn't hurt us, because that's our place, and there's no better place to live in the world than here. I mean, if you drop me in Finland, it's the first thing I'll do is go back. Can you imagine? I was born in Finland. I mean, what do you do there? Fill in a form for a permit to remove a tree. You know, that's most dangerous thing you do in your life. We live here. That's we made for this thing, and. So the administration, when Trump came into power, things changed, and they adopted a particular approach towards South Africa, and we couldn't ignore it. We had to respond to that. But that process is continuing. This is a continuous process, but it's complicated.
We're going to go to questions now, but I've got to ask you this one, the rapid fire that Rossi Erasmus was given with Bernard Mostert. South Africans are?
Fucking tough.
No, I want you to say.
I can't repeat what Rossi said. I mean, my wife says every time I use that word, she's cringing. And I say, I'll try my best, but it's down to about 10 times a day. But I can use it easily.
But no, you're just repeating what Rossi said.
Yeah, I'm repeating. I'm quoting Rossi, yeah.
What would you say? South Africans are?
Well, that's more or less the right thing. I mean, ek dink ons is half bedonderd gemaak. Is dit 'n ander? Dit is hoe ons is. We made for this place. We understand this.
South Africans are
landmakers. What's that in English?
Landmakers. Make a plan. We make a plan. We make things happen. Kone?
Simply the best. Alec, I want just to add one thing before you perhaps go to questions in terms of what Gerard said with regard to the United States. If I could suggest, if people want to understand where the American administration stands and what we should expect of them, there's a document issued by the White House on the 25th of November last year called the United States National Security Strategy. You'll find it on the website of the White House. It's a document about 29 pages. And it deals with the Americans' current administration's strategy for the United States. It's 29 pages. Please go and have a look at that. Read it. And then you'll understand exactly what's happening in the world at the moment. And the challenge for us is, if we know that, how do we play into that reality to our own benefit?
Rather than our, perhaps, perceived ideology.
Exactly.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. Building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox, sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.